some of our fellow members were delayed in longer caucus meetings. That's the problem when you go to those things. You actually have to stay and listen. So we will begin public hearings. Representative Ackerman and I, anyway, we'll be the only two who understand any of this. With a public hearing on Senate Bill 165A. Council?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 165A comes to you from former Representative Kevin Mannix, and it provides that child support arrearages have priority over general creditors in certain claims of Adult and Family Services Division. Former Representative Mannix, Kevin Mannix, is here, and I'm sure more than willing to testify.
In fact, he has signed up. Representative Mannix, please come forward.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Kevin Mannix. I'm an attorney in private practice in Salem. I'm here on my own behalf. When you die, death and taxes are always certain. One of the other things that's certain is that there will be priority given to current support of spouse and children, but no priority is given to past due support obligations. So when there is a past due support obligation, it gets considered along with all the other general creditors in that mass of arrearages that are handled, and usually that means some proportionate share is paid and it's not paid in full. This simply allows prioritization to child support arrearages. I shouldn't use the word simply, though, because there are, in the limited number of instances where this occurs, there is manifest unfairness, I believe, in saying that, well, we'll take care of the current support, that is, while this estate is pending, we'll take care of the support that's due to keep someone going, but we're not going to pay that past due child support, an obligation that you had that you never met, or that you met incompletely. And I don't believe there's any opposition to this bill, and it is a nice adjustment to the law to do justice in a limited number of cases where this problem occurs.
Thank you. Any questions for former Representative Mannix on Senate Bill 165? You're the only one who has signed up, Representative. Was it the same way it worked in the Senate as well?
Well, we had, Mr. Chairman, we had two or three other people over there. We made sure we amended this bill in the Senate to take care of any complications with the language, and I think that caused anyone else to disappear into the mist.
Well, this is not a subject matter generally where if people have a problem, they're shy about signing up to testify. So thank you very much. Are there no other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll close the public hearing and move on, since I don't have a quorum, to go into work session, opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 337A. Yeah, I guess we did. Well, we'll wait for a couple more members to come. Let's go to 337A. Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 337A comes to you from the Support and Enforcement Division. Requires the Child Support Division be given notice of domestic relations matter that affects child support when child support rights have been assigned to the State of Oregon. Defines child support rights as a right to establish and enforce an obligation to provide child support, including but not limited to medical support, as an unsatisfied obligation to support. We have Ronell Schenkel here who will explain all these matters to us.
Ms. Schenkel.
For the record, Ronell Schenkel, Department of Justice, Division of Child Support. Mr. Taylor's summary pretty much captures what this bill is about. It is not attempting to change any of the requirements in the law, but simply to clarify for the courts and private practitioners when they need to serve the child support program as a party. And in doing that, we've defined a new term in the statute, child support rights, and explained when we would need to be served. There was a minor amendment to this bill on the Senate side to clarify that term to avoid any unintended consequences on spousal-only orders and the enforcement of those. Be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions about Senate Bill 337, colleagues of Ms. Schenkel? Could you explain again for me, Ronell, what the amendment was in the Senate?
Initially, Chair Williams, we had a different definition. It was, I believe, just support rights, and we added the term child to make it clear that for this particular definition, we are referring to the child support rights specifically.
Okay. And you're the only one signed up to testify, so there must not be a lot of controversy about this. Any questions? Okay, hearing none. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 337A. Open a work session on Senate Bill 337A. Come on, somebody.
We're almost asleep.
We're in work session.
We are. You want someone to move the bill?
Yeah, Representative Krieger.
Move the bill to the floor.
Representative Krieger moves Senate Bill 337A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. To the full committee. Thanks, Representative Shirley. Just in time, yeah. We would have been in big trouble. To the full committee with a due pass recommendation, is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any objection? Okay, the bill will move to the full committee. Representative Krieger, can you carry this one? Okay. We're going to go back and open a work session on Senate Bill 165A, which we just heard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 165A provides that child support arrearages have priority over general creditors in certain claims of the Adult and Family Services Division.
This is the child support arrearages bill that former Representative Mannix just testified on. There was no opposition to the bill, and there were some amendments that were adopted in the Senate. So the chair would move Senate Bill 165A to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, the bill will move to the full committee. And Representative Wilson, would you carry that one?
You have to.
Thank you. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 338, a public hearing on Senate Bill 338A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 338A comes here from the Support Enforcement Division, allows the administrator for the Division of Child Support of the Department of Justice to communicate directly to an individual, even when the individual is represented by counsel, if the communication involves the individual's child support account. We have several witnesses, including Ronell Schenkel from the Department of Justice here.
Okay. Ms. Schenkel, if you'd come forward, please.
For the record, Ronell Schenkel, Department of Justice, Division of Child Support, here in support of Senate Bill 338. This would amend Oregon Revised Statute 25020 to allow the staff of District Attorney's Office that handle child support cases to talk to parties who are represented by an attorney on certain specific accounting information that is listed in that statute. This actually sets out an exception to the Oregon State Bar Disciplinary Rule 7-104 to allow them to do this and provide this information, which we believe would provide better customer service. Last session, House Bill 2235 was passed to do the same exact thing and allow that exception for our department and the Division of Child Support. We've been providing this customer service successfully with no problems. This is simply an expansion to spread this throughout our entire program. Again, there was a minor Senate amendment on this bill, and that was to add a sentence to clarify that by specifying that when someone has an attorney, we can talk about these things, there was no intent to say for those customers who do not have an attorney that we were limited, so we added that clarifying point. Be happy to answer any questions.
Is there any questions about Senate Bill 338 for Ms. Schenkel?
Just a clarification, it seems like the information that you want to disclose is pretty much public information already.
Chair Williams,
I'm not saying you shouldn't do it, but in terms of facilitating communication with child support obligors and obligees, it seems like a reasonable proposal.
Chair Williams and Representative Ackerman, it seems very reasonable to us. Technically, under our statutes and our rules, most of that information is considered confidential, so I wouldn't go as far as to say that it's public information, but certainly it's information that should be provided to the customers and should not concern the attorney-client relationship.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you, Ms. Schenkel. Lane Barlow?
For the record, I'm Lane Barlow for representing Oregonians for Family Law Reform. We endorse Senate Bill 338. We would just urge you to make one amendment to it. I don't have this in writing. The child support caseworkers need to be able to provide whatever information the clients, obligor, or obligee need. That's why we've endorsed this change that was on the Senate side. We would just urge you to consider making one more change, and that would be to put an emergency clause in it rather than wait the 3 months. I think the child support caseworkers that are out there need this tool, and they need it as soon as we can get it to them, just to clear up any confusion. That's all.
Thank you, Mr. Barlow. Are there questions for Mr. Barlow? Mr. Barlow, before you step back, did you raise the emergency clause issue with Senator Minnis in the Senate?
No.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Okay, and Carl Stecker.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Carl Stecker. I'm a deputy district attorney here in Marion County. I'm here today on behalf of Marion County and also the Oregon District Attorneys Association to endorse a passage of Senate Bill 338. We were involved in early on in discussions related to this. We were concerned, of course, about communications with those clients of those individuals who are represented by counsel might have caused some problems with the disciplinary rule. Obviously, this is a good solution by which we're able to communicate with parties on matters at least of limited scope and commonly requested information. So we would encourage and ask for your passage of this measure. Thank you. I'm glad to answer any other questions.
Thank you, Mr. Stecker. Are there questions for Mr. Stecker? Everybody's just getting along so nicely today. Thank you. We're almost not sure what to do with ourselves. Is there any discussion about the, close the public hearing. Anyone else here to testify on this bill? Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 338A. Open a work session on Senate Bill 338A. Any committee discussion on the bill? Anybody want to? Yes, Representative Ackerman.
Yes, I'll move Senate Bill 338 to the committee with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Ackerman moves Senate Bill 338A to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on this motion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, the bill will move to the full committee. And Representative Ackerman, would you carry?
Yes, I will.
Thank you. We'll open a work session, a public hearing. I'm getting ahead of myself again on Senate Bill 339A. And we have familiar faces. Ms. Shankle, if you'd come forward. We should have announced committee that this is Ms. Shankle Day here in the committee.
So, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
We had Ms. Shankle month. Last session.
Yes, I know. I know. And as much as we like her, I'm sort of enjoying this session a little bit more. So. Please, Michelle.
For the record, Ronell Shankle, Department of Justice, Division of Child Support. I'm being extremely brief on most of my testimony because we've provided information to all of you in advance this past week. However, here's something for you to work on. This bill has some information that is new that we'd like to bring before your committee. You're receiving handouts, four of them actually. Full written testimony on the engrossed version of the bill and testimony on some amendments we would like to bring before your committee today. It may be easier for you to follow along on the other two handouts, which are the highlight tables, which have simple bullets and walk you through the items that I will discuss with you. Again, we have a chart of bullets on both the underlying bill and the amendments that we have.
Can you hold up your chart again? I'm not sure we've got that one yet.
My apologies, I didn't collate for staff, so she's trying to hand them all out.
Okay. Bill will help get them distributed. Then we'll...
Again, you will have two written testimonies. One will just say Senate Bill 339, and the other one says proposed amendments, since those are two separate documents. And then two charts, the same thing, Senate Bill 339 highlights and amendment highlights. So it looks like you have duplicates, but in fact you do not. And they are the A5 amendments, I believe, that we have before you today.
Now, this is more like it. A little confusion. This committee can start to sort of get into the groove.
Okay. I think we're ready. If you want to proceed, Ms. Schenkel.
Chair Williams, I did provide summary charts to everyone in advance. Would you like me to go ahead and walk through each of the points in the underlying bill as well as the amendments? Do you want to? This is our housekeeping bill, so it has several technical pieces in it.
Why don't you take us through the bill first?
All right.
In your Angross version of the bill?
Yes.
And then take us through the amendments second.
All right. The Angross bill itself has, at this point, six areas in it that we are covering. Some of them were in the initial draft of the bill, and others were amended in on the Senate side. The first piece that you will find, and actually you will find this throughout the entire Angross bill, is we had a request from legislative counsel that we had come to a point where we had several definitions of administrator in the statutes relating to child support, and they asked that we choose one and use that throughout the statutes. So you will see over and over again in this bill references to administrator being cleaned up to refer to all one statutory definition. The second item in this bill is related to the change that was made last session to create the Central Hearings Officer panel. There was still a reference in the bill to the Employment Department Hearings Officers, so this was just a piece that we missed and needed to clean up that reference. So you have both the reference to the new hearings panel and then the sunset language referring back to the original language should that law default back.
That's what we'll call the Shetterly fix.
Thank you very much. I'll take it.
The third piece in the Angross bill is in Oregon Revised Statute 25.414. This was a very minor technical miss in the statute, but it's important because this is a statute that's talking about unemployment compensation and related specifically to child support, and in one section they left un off of employment. So it says employment, and it needs to say unemployment. The fourth item is the most crucial piece in this housekeeping bill. It is Oregon Revised Statute 25.610, and that statute specifically has to do with the way that we distribute State Department of Revenue tax intercepts that we do for child support. Last session, the last couple of sessions actually, we've been amending the statutes to make it clear that in Oregon, in the child support program, we would like to have the statutes tell us that we have rulemaking authority and whatever the federal government tells us we need to do with regard to the distribution of child support, we will do to be in compliance. Basically, the federal model right now is pay the families first and the state last. That, in fact, does meet our mission, and that is a good thing. We missed a statute. We have a specific statute in Oregon that talks about how we disperse the tax offset for the state intercepts, and it does not say family first. So not only would we like to change that to meet our mission, but that will bring us completely into federal compliance with our regulations at this time. So that's the most important piece in this bill. The fifth item is Oregon Revised Statute 25.646. These are a series of statutes dealing with our financial institution data match process, and we missed a reference in here. It says that the Department of Human Services will be requesting information from the financial institutions, and in fact, by contract, it's the Department of Justice Division of Child Support that sends out those requests and those notices. The financial institutions that existed at the time we passed this law in 97 knew all about it, but as new, for instance, credit unions pop up in Oregon, is somewhat confusing to them, and so this would just clarify that it is acceptable for them to get the request from the Department of Justice. The sixth and the final point in the Angross version is Oregon Revised Statute 461.715. That's a section of the statute that has to do with the Lottery Commission and specifically talks about lottery prizes and the intercept process used for child support. We're trying to do a couple of things here. In partnering with the Lottery Commission, we're trying to clarify in this statute that we can intercept both a one-time cash prize as well as those larger prizes where they're paid out in annual installments. We don't think that is totally clear in the statute. The Lottery Commission wanted us to clarify that, so we believe this language has done that. Additionally, we're asking for more flexible language regarding our actual data match process so that with the improvement in our systems, we could exchange more information by computer and expedite the process for the customers and not have to do as much person-to-person trying to call someone on the phone when they have a winner in the office. Those are the 6 points in the underlying bill.
Why don't we pause there and see if there are any questions from the committee about any of the 6 points in the underlying bill before we move on to the dash 5 amendments. Is there any discussion about any of these points that anybody has concerns with? This is, as she pointed out, sort of their housekeeping bill. Okay. Hearing none, let's have you take us through the amendments.
All right. Again, on the A5 amendments, we have 6 more topics that we'd like to cover today. The first one is actually language that comes out of this session, House Bill 3252. That was a bill that was actually requested by Legal Aid Services, but the Child Support Program supports the concept. Specifically, I'm testifying on behalf of the Division of Child Support, I should say, and we support the concept. This would expand the rebuttable presumption that we have in the law in Oregon right now that says when an obligated parent is receiving cash assistance themselves, that it's the presumption that they're unable to pay child support during that period of time. This would strive to broaden that to say if they're receiving TANF through a tribe, that should also be considered suspension. When we drafted these laws, we did not have tribal TANF programs. And further, that if they're receiving assistance from another state, that we should allow the presumption of the suspension. That would be fairly common when you look at the Portland-Vancouver scenario. It may be an Oregon case, but perhaps the obligor lives right across the river in Vancouver and receiving assistance from Washington. So it strives to expand that particular statute and that process to allow relief to those obligors. The second point in the bill is revising Oregon Revised Statute 25.287. This is the statute that is talking about modifications, and this is the type of modification where the case, the order, is at least 2 years old and it qualifies to be looked at for a review. And when the program makes an administrative determination that, yes, the order's 2 years old, but it's still in compliance and does not need to be modified, this is just attempting to clarify in the statute for folks that the way they get their hearing is through administrative process and then the appeal goes to circuit court. It's not clear in the statute what type of remedies they have if they don't agree with our determination in that scenario. The third piece in our amendments, ORS 25.417, has to do with income withholding, and this is an attempt to help clarify this law for employers who are trying to comply with our income withholding orders, and this language is specific to employers who pay their employees more than once a month. It's really easy when you pay once a month to figure out how much child support to send in. It's not as simple when you pay more frequently than that. So we're trying to clarify that language for them so that they can clearly know how much to send in for the withholding. The fourth item is ORS 25.750. And this has to do with the Child Support Program License Suspension Program. And it has very specifically to do with a piece of the federal requirement that was enacted in Oregon that says for applications for licenses, they have to gather Social Security numbers on those applications. That way, later on in the process, if Child Support Program is working on a suspension, we have that number available as a secondary identifier when we're trying to suspend the license of a John Smith. What happened was in Oregon, when we had federal requirements that we needed to broaden our program to include recreational licenses, it was the House Judiciary Committee that helped us do that at the time. The choice in Oregon was to define recreational licenses for us as hunting and fishing, and we did that and did not realize the impact we would have when it came to implementing this, and during the interim had quite a cry from the constituents that in certain scenarios, even a minor child has to apply for certain types of hunting and fishing tags and licenses. And so suddenly we had children coming in with grandparents perhaps, and they didn't know their Social Security number, and they couldn't give that to the application. So it was a customer service issue for ODFW and the Child Support Program as well, since it was on our behalf. We asked the federal government, the Child Support Program asked the federal government to give us a waiver to the federal requirements to allow us to limit the age requirement on gathering Social Security numbers. We have verbal confirmation that we are going to be denied that waiver, not because of the content of our request, but because there is a lawsuit going on with some other national issues in this area, and they simply are not going to make any changes right now while the lawsuit is pending. What we're asking to do instead is to take the word all out of that term in the statute where it refers to recreational licenses and give us rulemaking authority. And we think that gets us to a smaller step, not where we were trying to go, but it would get us to the ability to define in rule that the only licenses we really intended to go after, because in reality, the only type we would have time to catch up with are, for instance, annual licenses, not the weekend passes, not the day passes, and those sorts of things that maybe children and grandparents are coming in and obtaining. So this would be a small step. It would provide relief, we think, our understanding would be, to children under the age of 12. Doesn't get us all the way to 16, but it is a step, and it would improve the customer service piece. The next item, the fifth item in our amendments, is actually an amendment that we worked on with our partner, Oregon Youth Authority, and it seeks to amend ORS 419C.597. This is really a follow-up to their House Bill 2204 from last session, where they were doing some cleanup related to the term youth offender, and a piece was missed specifically related to child support and the assignment of rights for the youth offenders, and so this is a technical language cleanup that we would like to make in that arena. The final amendment proposed is ORS 656.234. It has to do with workers' compensations, and specifically the piece we're amending is on the lump sum payouts, trying to clarify how much we can take for child support in that scenario when it's a lump sum. Additionally, you'll notice in the amendments that we are seeking an effective date on this bill at this point. We did not think to do this earlier on the Senate side, but we're asking that you give us 90 days after signing the effective date. This bill has gotten so many technical pieces in it, plus with that federal compliance issue, we'd like to enact it sooner, should you pass all of these amendments, rather than later, to take care of these issues. So we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Ackerman.
I'm relating pretty much to the Dash 5 amendments. And I read them very, very quickly, but it appears that you set up an administrative procedure in a contested case process to determine arrearages and credits and payments on a child support account. Is that a fair reading of those provisions?
Chair Williams, Representative Ackerman, I'm not certain what section you're referring to. Is it the modification, the review and determination section?
I'm on page 4 and 5.
Of the amendments?
We're on the Dash 5 amendments.
Members of the committee, I'll just point out that I think all of our Dash 5 amendments, our copies are missing page 15 and 16. Bill's gone out to get copies for us, the last two pages, because we don't have the last two sections.
We may have some, Chair Williams. We brought some extra. Cindy will check and see if we have all the pages in ours.
Bill just went to grab. He'll just make copies. We've got everything through page 14. We're just missing, I think, page 15 and 16.
I'm sorry.
But that doesn't relate to Representative Ackerman.
Yes. Could you please tell me one more time which page?
The way I read this, if there's a dispute as to whether payments have been made, the obligor can request a hearing, administrative law hearing under the Administrative Procedures Act to get this straightened out, then you ultimately have an appeal to a circuit court. Yeah, that's how I read this. I guess my point is, if you have an existing domestic relations file, you have the same issues the same matters at issue, do you have to go through this APA process, or is there a procedure where you can go through the domestic relations file in circuit court?
Chair Williams, Representative Ackerman, are you on page 4 of the bill? Am I correct? Is that where you were at?
4 and 5, yes.
4 and 5. We do have a process. First of all, that piece is not the new language. That's existing statute. The only change we're making there is the reference to the hearings officers because of that panel.
Okay.
But yes, there is an administrative process within our child support program for those hearing rights. Does that answer your question?
Well, I'm trying to figure out how we coordinate these things. For instance, you can get an order through the APA process that certain payments were made. And how does that get transmitted into the domestic relations file so that you can get credit against your child support judgment? I'm trying to link these two proceedings together and kind of figure out why we just don't do everything out of the domestic relations file, if one exists.
Chair Williams, Representative Ackerman, I'd like to bring our General Counsel Attorney Jean Fogarty forward. She might be able to answer your questions, but I would add that the child support program is the basic accounting system for the child support order. So we keep the majority of the accounting records. We do file all of our information with the circuit court, but we, for the most part, on most cases, tend to be the record keeper of the actual accounts. So we would be making the adjustments to the account, whether the process had gone through our administrative process or through a court, and then they give us notice that that had occurred.
Right. I guess just to follow up, my problem is this. You go through an administrative law process to get these arrearages or credits straightened out, but unless you go back and relate to the domestic relations file, the obligor has a judgment that probably should be partially satisfied. I don't see any linkage in these proceedings to clarify the court record.
Chair Williams, Representative Ackerman, for the record, I'm Jean Fogarty, Assistant Attorney General and General Counsel to the Division of Child Support. The statute also requires that when the Department of Human Resources is doing the accounting, Department of Justice, excuse me, is doing the accounting on a support case, that any adjustment satisfactions to the case have to be filed through us and then to the court.
Okay.
So that both the judgment record in the court and our accounting system is in sync. So we are required by statute, anytime any satisfaction is required to the judgment on a case that we're accounting, we have to, that satisfaction has to come through us and then to the court. So I think that that's the link that maybe
concerned. I didn't know if we were covering that in this bill, but I saw the administrative law process, and I certainly take your word that there is linkage between the two, and that's fine with me. Thank
Great.
You.
Great.
Thank you. Thank you, Gene. Are there any further questions about any other aspects of the Dash 5 amendments? Representative Dingfelder, do you have a question? Ronell, tell me why on, just out of curiosity, your last section, Section 28, that makes it effective on the 91st date after which we've adjourned. We've made a policy decision last session to move to January 1 dates as sort of the start dates. We've done some emergency clauses. Why the 90-day date? Just because you guys are more comfortable with it, or what's the issue there?
Chair Williams, we were talking with Legislative Council when they were drafting these amendments, and we talked about an emergency clause, which is what you're doing more routinely if we can't wait till January. Our concern with an emergency clause was the federal compliance piece on the distribution of the tax offset requires an adjustment to our CSIS computer system, and that made us a little bit nervous that we couldn't pull that off that quickly. Yet we wanted to be able to enact that distribution scheme and fix some of these other technical issues sooner than January, because we think we can be ready sooner than January to improve the customer service. So the suggestion was made to go with the 90 days.
Okay. Anybody have any thoughts about that? Are you okay? All right. The hard part is obviously the reason we went to the January 1 date was to create a certain level of certainty for people in knowing when laws the legislature enact become effective, except for those that we've deemed worthy enough of an emergency clause. So we start to scatter sort of the effective dates of these things sort of out through anywhere from the date the governor signs the bill to January 1. It just makes it harder. But, you know, your people typically practice fairly consistently in this area, and so it probably isn't a huge problem. And to the extent you're improving customer service, those people are probably going to be happy about that sooner than not. So, okay. Any other questions about any of this? Okay, thank you. Our next witness is Karen Berkowitz, Legal Aid Services.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Karen Berkowitz. I'm an attorney with Legal Aid Services of Oregon, the Portland office, and I'm here specifically to talk about Section 6, which is the amendment to ORS 25245. We did urge the inclusion of this section in this bill because of some cases we had come across over the last few years where individuals who are members of Oregon tribes, like the Grand Ronde tribe, did not get the benefit of the presumption of inability to pay child support when they received general assistance benefits and TANF benefits. And we also came across low-income individuals from the state of Washington on general assistance who couldn't get the benefit of this. So this is just sort of an expansion of what the state already does with other Oregonians who are low-income. And other than that, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer it.
Thank you, Karen. Are there any questions for Ms. Berkowitz about Section 6? And that was in the, that's in the amendments. That's in the Dash 5 amendments.
That's correct.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Ms. Thanks. Berkowitz. Finally, Lynn Barlow.
Mr. Chair, Lane Barlow for Oregonians for Family Law Reform. We're okay with this one.
Great. Perfect testimony, Lane. That's
beautiful.
You read my mind, just exactly how to testify. okay. No one else has signed up. Is there anybody else here to speak about Senate Bill 339? Okay. Close the public hearing. Open a work session on Senate Bill 339A.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Shetterly.
Move the Dash A5 amendments into House Bill 339.
Representative Shetterly has moved the Dash A5 amendments into Senate Bill 339. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Shetterly.
Excuse me. I move Senate Bill 339 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Shetterly moves Senate Bill 339 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Bill will move to full committee. Anybody want to take this large and somewhat diverse bill forward?
Representative Shetterly made the motion.
If you don't want to put it on consent calendar, I'll be glad to do it.
We can decide that at the full, I guess. That's fine. I'm thinking that since this would be a good one for Representative Dingfelder to cut her teeth on just the issue of support enforcement, because it's so much of the work that this committee does.
Can I wait until the full committee?
Yeah, sure, you can wait until the full committee.
Give me some time to mull over how much I want to embarrass myself
before. No, this is a good bill. And Rennell gave you the roadmap. I mean, the roadmap's right there. You just read it off the chart.
Mr. Chair, just for Representative Dingfelder's information, this is the kind of bill where you read the first paragraph of the staff measure summary and you sit down.
Okay, good bill, good summary.
No one asks any questions.
That's right.
I'll have to mention that to other members of my caucus.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, that's
right. They're harder than we had.
Okay. Great. We are now at, I lost my sheet, Bill.
Right here, Senate Bill 340, Mr. Chair.
Senate Bill 340, we'll open a public hearing.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 340 comes to you from the Support Enforcement Division, and Rennell Shankle is here to testify on behalf of the division. It gives the Support Enforcement Division greater flexibility to work with those who owe child support, and substitutes administrator for the Division of Child Support of the Department of Justice or District Attorney in those parts of Chapter 25 of the Oregon Revised Code that pertain to suspension of licenses.
Thank you, Ms. Shankle.
For the record, Ron L. Shankle, Department of Justice, Division of Child Support. The staff summary is an entirely accurate summary of what exists in the bill at this point. When we briefed you on this bill early in the session, it had several other provisions in it that were amended out on the Senate side. So what is left in this bill appears to be small and short, but is very significant to the program. We would like to have greater flexibility when we're working in our license suspension program and negotiating agreements with parents to be able to negotiate more flexible agreements and not always monetary agreements. This tool, we intend to use it to establish those agreements and not to suspend the licenses. That is not our goal. So we think this would enable us to move towards that area, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Good. Thank you. Are there questions for Ms. Shankle? We're letting you off easy. Mr. Barlow is signed up to testify on this bill.
Down.
Oh, he's sitting down. He's going to talk on this one.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Lane Barlow, speaking for Oregonians for Family Law Reform. We're a group of parents, custodial, non-custodial, that are concerned with laws and how they affect our families. I sat down because we're okay with the current state of this bill, but I just wanted to put it on the record that we're expressing confidence in the current child support program administration and the direction that they're moving. We like that. They listen, and they're making the reforms that are needed. That's all.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Barlow. Are there any questions? Okay. Anybody else want to testify on Senate Bill 340?
Hearing none, we'll close the hearing. Open a work session on Senate Bill 340.
Chair.
Representative Shenerle.
Please don't mistake my motion as a request to carry this bill.
I understand.
But I would move Senate Bill 340 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Shetterly moves Senate Bill 340A to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on his motion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Shetterly.
Not so much on the motion, but reflection on Mr. Barlow's testimony. And it has not been too many sessions passed where any child support bill would have brought forth the forces arrayed for battle in these committees. And I think it's a tremendous remark on the progress that the division has made, I think, under Ms. Schenkel's leadership and the team that she works with in working with Mr. Barlow and moving towards solving problems. I think there were sessions ago and these kinds of things just drew the battle lines, and I think it's great to see, and I'm just thrilled and would again commend Ms. Schenkel for the work that she's done, Mr. Barlow for his willingness and ability to work with the division as well. I think it's a great progress in a tough area.
Thank you, Representative Shetterly.
I could add one thing.
Yeah,
Mr. Council. Chair, members of the committee, these bills took two full days of the hearings in the Senate side.
Oh, wow.
So aren't we pleased that these started out over in the Senate?
We're very pleased.
Aren't we pleased? We appreciate the good work that the Senate committee put into working with the parties on these bills. Okay, before us is Representative Shetterly's motion to move Senate Bill 340 as A to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Any objection?
The bill will move to the full committee.
It's hard for me not to ask you to carry that after your moving and heart-rendered speech.
I don't care.
Okay. Representative Vicki Walker, you want to carry this bill?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, good. Great. All right. So we are now to work session on...
Is that it?
Did we do the 3680?
No, I think we're not doing 3680 today. I think
okay.
We pulled 3680.
We're getting some additional amendments on that bill.
I'll wait to vote no until then.
So I think, colleagues,
we... Right, Mr. Chair. We've got a work group that you were involved
in. Right. There's a work group working on some amendments to the bill. So with that, I think we are done with our meeting today, and the committee is adjourned.
Well, that was good timing on my part.
Good to see you, Ken.